Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes.
Parenting on Moncrief.
1894-53-106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. We are joined once again by the clinical psychologist and huge Donny Osmond fan, David Carey. David, good afternoon to you.
That bloody song is stuck in my head.
Mine
now.
Too. I was actually outside and I found myself humming it. Oh, God. Right, first question is this, David. We have a 7.5-year-old daughter who's currently attending a Catholic primary school. She's due to make her communion next year. We only got her baptized to ensure she got a place in the school. We don't practice any religion ourselves. I would describe ourselves as atheist agnostic. When I heard about the mother and baby home in Tuam, it was the last straw. I don't want our family to have any association with this religion. But how can we explain this to our 7-year-old? She does have some belief in it, though I'm careful to provide her with alternative explanations and always preface everything I say with, some people believe this, but no one really knows. I don't want to get into a big discussion with her about the behaviour of the Catholic Church in Ireland, but I also don't want to bury my head and hers in the sand for fear of upsetting the status quo. Any advice would be greatly appreciated.
Yes, my advice is keep your anxiety and your anger to yourself and away from your 7-year-old child. You bought into the system. She's being instructed in religious education, and she will very soon be participating in one of the sacraments of the Roman Catholic Church. And so be it. You don't need to discuss what's gone on in Tuam and elsewhere in terms of all the horror stories we hear about the religious in Ireland, in particular the Catholic Church. There are many, many examples of good and decent priests and nuns out there who are doing Trojan and good work. So I think you just need to button the lip and get on with it. I question, you know, this whole business of sending them and getting them baptized so they get enrolled in the nice school. There are choices. We have Educate Together schools.
Not if you live down the country.
Well, I don't know where these people live. That's true. But then you have a problem. You know, you either play the system and let the child be instructed in religious education and come as she becomes an older child and a young teen and whatnot, she'll begin to formulate her own opinions. I don't think you need to be discussing this tomb business with a 7-year-old, to be honest, unless she asks questions. And then, of course, answer the questions. Now, my bias, I have to be clear about this because I am American. I am a firm believer in the separation of church and state, and I don't think a religion ought to be taught in our primary or secondary schools. But the system here is the system here.
Yeah.
And that's what the system we buy into unless we have an alternative. And if we don't, then you have no choice. And so you deal with it the best you can. But discussing these kind of things with 7-year-olds is not helpful, productive, or appropriate, I don't think.
Yeah, and I suppose they're also assuming that just because their 7-year-old is going to a Catholic school that, you know, there is no evidence really that most people have gone through Catholic schools in Ireland, but, you know, a church attendance is at an all-time low, so it's not exactly getting that you know, the result they might fear.
Yeah, I see a lot of teenagers, let's say 13 to 18 years of age, and sometimes the conversation does stray into, you know, do you have a God belief and whatnot, and the vast majority that I have spoken to have no particular religious or creedal belief system whatsoever. They have just turned away from it. Now, my sample size is small and rather skewed, of course. So I do know that there are some very devout Catholic adolescents and teens and young adults in this country. There's room for many different kinds of belief systems. And there's room in a democracy for people who don't want to believe in a particular religion. But I think we need to be careful how we deal with that with our younger children. We shouldn't be necessarily going down the lines of exposing them to the horrors that we know have been perpetrated because it's one-sided. Now, this is a parent who is filled with anger.
But they're a little young, really, to be
Well, it's
to,
seven.
To
it's a little bit too young. Yeah. Go easy with this.
Yeah. Lynn says, David is wrong on this. Are parents not to change their views? Are they to go against their conscience?
Sorry, I don't understand what the point of this is.
I suppose what she's saying is that by not somehow, even though they've sent their child to a Catholic school, now let's assume that they didn't have an option
but to send
their child to a Catholic school, but that somehow they have to speak to their child about the beliefs they're being taught in the school, the Catholic beliefs, is against their conscience.
Well, the child is 7. How much confusion can a 7-year-old brain deal with here? I mean, I think that the best thing is just to let it be. The child is exposed to religious beliefs. I'm sure there's open conversation as she progresses through primary school in RE instruction. In fact, the instruction looks at other religious beliefs, by the way.
Not just Christianity.
And the truth will out. She'll eventually formulate her own opinion. Mm. Now, if she asks, then you answer the questions that are being asked. I think this is a good guideline for parents. If a child asks a question about something that's a delicate subject, answer it directly and succinctly.
Mm.
But if the child isn't asking, don't thrust it on them and into their head, because here's a 7-year-old, and parents may want to start talking about, this horror of the Catholic Church and what they've done to people. That child has to go to school and sit in RE class and participate in the sacraments, and just imagine the confusion in a 7-year-old's brain. I'm sensitive to the age of the child.
Yeah. The Killer Wallet Killer says, I just tell my children that what they hear in school is rubbish, but don't say that because of school at school, because they get offended. It works. So there you go.
Neil Postman, very, very...
anyway, this
famous.
Is Ireland.
This is Ireland.
Everything
yeah.
is nuanced. Everyone's a Catholic. We just don't take it that seriously. It's, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, not everyone, but...
most people. That's the prevailing... And in fact, it always was the feckin' prevailing ethos, if you ask me. We just got an email from the school where they said they were starting a new program for our daughter's class of 5-year-olds. They will be teaching them how to name the parts of the body, including parts of the male and female body, using appropriate anatomical terms. All that is grand, but they said to prepare ourselves for any questions at home. And I got to thinking that I don't know what the appropriate anatomical terms for female and body parts to tell a 5-year-old are. Can you shed any light on the matter? How should we approach this?
Well, you know what the name of the body parts are, surely, as an adult, and those are the names you ought to be using.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely convinced that these sort of programs belong in primary school, by the way. They're usually not handled particularly sophisticated manner. Having worked in a college of education for nearly 10 years, whenever, particularly with our first-year students, now these would be 18, 19, 20-year-olds, if you mention the word penis or vagina, they all start to giggle and laugh. You know, and these are our teachers in training. We throw a little bit too much into the schools, I think.
Mm.
Now, if the child asks, then answer the question. Of course.
I mean,
it's penis. Funny story from a friend of mine back in the States years ago. Her 7-year-old son went to school, and the parents had been alerted, we're having one of those talks today, and we're going to be naming the body parts. He came home from school. This little fellow was 7 or 8, I think. And his mother said, so how did it go to school today in that class? And he covered his ears and ran up the stairs screaming, don't say the P word. Don't say the P word.
Yeah. right, okay. So there you go. That's quite possibly the range of reactions you'll get. A young boy aged about 10 from a nearby house has started bullying behaviour towards my 9-year-old son. There's some name-calling. More recently, he took his hat, hit him, and was rough with him before throwing his hat back a little while later. In the end, my son shouldered the boy, and his dad advises that the next time he should kick the boy in the nuggets. Again, not an anatomically correct term. We need to point that out. What I'm struggling with is how best to deal with it and to equip my son to manage these types of situations. Most men that I consult, including my husband, talk about the need for boys to stand their ground and hit back to show that they're not to be messed with. I am uncomfortable with this approach, but want to minimise the impacts of this type of stuff. Should it happen in the school or on the road? What do you think?
Well, I can assure you that if your son follows father's advice to the letter and does what daddy is encouraging him to do, there'll be hell to pay, because it could result in a rather serious and unfortunate injury.
Mm.
Wouldn't the wise thing be, since this is a neighboring house, quote-unquote, to ring up the parents, ask to have a little conversation, without blaming and finger-pointing, simply saying, What I've heard is our two boys aren't getting along so well together. There's been a little argy-bargy and unpleasantness between them. Could we just sit them down in our company and ask them to solve their problems in a more gentle way or something? I mean, why go down the road initially of encouraging your son and or daughter to hit, push, shove, kick, etc., a bully, when this is a neighbor and the problem could easily be solved? Perhaps, not always, I recognize that. But let's assume these are reasonable people. You have a little conversation with them, and most reasonable people want their children to play nice and get along with others.
Yeah.
And that's what I would do anyway. And, you know, that, because the bigger picture is this stereotypical male response of you have to punch back, you have to push back, et cetera, stand up to the bully. Well, you know, that can just get you in a lot of trouble. Because the reality is, if you do that, particularly in a school setting, you are going to be blamed.
Yeah.
You may end up being excluded from school. It's particularly in secondary school, if you, in quote unquote, stand up to the bully, punch him or her, or kick him or her, and now you have committed an assault, some parent's going to complain, you're going to suffer the consequences. We really need to think this through a little bit. There are other ways to deal with these things. Does the boy go to the same school? If that's the case, then talk to the teacher and see if teacher or any teachers have noticed that there's some unpleasantness during break time. But I would go with the simplest solution. In my head, it's the simplest solution anyway. Talk to the parents.
Yeah.
Because no blaming.
Yeah.
Don't say, your son is bullying my son. Our two boys, from what I'm hearing, aren't getting on so well.
Mm.
Can we sit down and talk to them and solve the problem?
Yeah.
What parent would take great offense at that approach?
And what parent would even like to think that their child was being mean to another child anyway?
Well,
you would want to correct that behavior.
Most right-thinking people in this world want to correct that behavior and are surprised to hear the two children aren't getting on well.
Mm.
So you don't have to start naming and blaming. Just deal with the reality. Fact is, the boys aren't getting on well. And also, since you're not there to see what happened before the hat was taken off his head, you don't know exactly what transpired. Sometimes the bully is responding to some unwitting or perhaps intentional provocation on the part of the child who appears the victim. We don't know, and you'll never really find out. When you try to play detective, you just drive yourself crazy.
Lot of reaction to the first question we had about the parents whose seven-year-old is going to a Catholic school and they're somewhat uncomfortable with that now. And even in an urban context, says this texter, there is limited choice for schools. There are not enough alternative choices. We put our child's name down for two Educate Together schools in our area. When he was 3 years old, we didn't get a place. For many parents, baptism is the last resort after looking at all other alternatives. There is not enough room in our democracy as most of our state-funded schools are Roman Catholic. I would be, certainly anecdotally, I've heard stories for Educate Together the schools where they basically tell the parents, if you want your child to come to this school, there's a certain date where you can put the name down. You have to be out on the pavement the night before camping to get the name down in time. My advice is don't tell your child because it's not happening now. It happened many years ago in different times. And Graham Finlay was contacted us over Twitter. Graham, you'll know, of course, a regular contributor to the programme. Graham from UCD says, you do have a constitutional right to opt out of religious education and sacraments. So there's an option for those parents. Michael says, last week my four-year-old asked me if God was in the sky. I told him that that's what his grandparents believe, but that mummy and daddy don't believe that. That we think it's only a story. He seemed content with that for the moment. Slowly, slowly, catchy monkey, says Michael. Well, I suppose, and then again, also at the same time, children have to make up their own minds about these things. And the question about using the anatomically correct names. I'm a primary school teacher, says his texter. We've been told by the Department of Education that we must use the words breast, bottom, penis and vagina in order to teach the Stay Safe program with child safety and where on the body is not appropriate to touch, so that the children know in the unfortunate case of any kind of abuse, the parents should use the same terms as in school, so we've been told. Another texter says, my five-year-old told his mother she had a bad china. we think she meant vagina. And Linda says on Twitter, my eight-year-old boy asked what his balls are for. I said to keep his willy company. Anyway, we have more questions for David after this.
Parenting on Moncrief.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. David Carey is still with us. Next question is this. My daughter is 12 and is carrying quite a bit of weight. I have tried to change her diet subtly without making a big fuss, but she's noticing now that some of her dinners are different to her brother's and she's refusing to eat them. I've joined her up to the local sports club too, which she's not mad about either. I don't want her to feel conscious about it and start a complex, so I'm reluctant to bring her to the doctor. Are there ways of positively changing her habits to help her lose weight without it becoming her main focus?
Yes, there are many ways. You made a tiny mistake there by preparing a separate sort of dinner for her and not the brother.
Mm.
So there's no reason why a healthy diet can't be presented to every member of the family as opposed to singling out one. Now, for whatever reason, she sees brother getting a nice, lovely pork chop and she's getting, greens and broccoli or whatever else she's getting. So rethink that. The best exercise for anyone, child or adult, is the one they enjoy the most.
Mm-hmm.
So if she doesn't like going to the gym and doing a workout, perhaps swimming. If she doesn't like that, perhaps a nice stroll with mommy, daddy, and brother 3 to 5 times a week. But however, not just a stroll, a nice brisk walk. That's good cardio fitness. There is a lot of things you can do without signaling her out. It would be really important not to say something like, "Oh, you're putting on a lot of weight, honey. We need to watch this," because that can be devastating to a child of 12, girl or boy. So I think you need to be rethink your dinners, rethink what kind of snacks you have available in the family home. The odd treat never hurts anyone, by the way. So, you don't have to be living like an ascetic monk in the Egyptian desert or anything. Get some exercise for all of you. Get involved in something. Go outdoors and do something as a family several times a week. That may not always be possible, but you have to get her involved in something that she'll enjoy and not bristle to. And brother should be involved also. So is the gym just for her, or is it for her and brother with mommy or daddy? These are the ways to handle this kind of thing. How much weight? You don't want to bring her to a doctor. Well, there comes a time in the life of every child when they should have a checkup, and 12 years of age is not a bad idea because it's the emergence of puberty.
Mm.
So that's a good reason to go to the GP, and GP can very easily handle a conversation with the child away from mommy or daddy about weight if GP thinks weight is an issue.
Yeah.
GPs are really good at this sort of thing.
Mm.
They do it all the time. They're sensitive. They know what to say and how to say it. They deal with thousands of children. So I think there's no reason not to go down that route. The appointment is not because of your weight, honey. It's because now you're 12 and your body's going to be changing. Good time to get a little checkup. We brought your brother at the same age, or we're going to bring brother at the same age. Mm. Play it low-key. You'll manage this.
Yeah, if it's about the whole family getting a bit fitter, then.
It is, yeah. You can't just single out one. They pick it up immediately.
Our 8-year-old keeps waking up most nights crying. We are sure he's still asleep, though, as he looks right through you. He's happy at school, never remembers this. What can we do to help, as that happens most nights?
I don't know that you have to do anything. As long as he's happy, well-adjusted, and waking up refreshed and has enough energy to get through the day, as long as his learning profile hasn't changed in any way, if his personality hasn't changed and he remains a happy, well-adjusted youngster who can play well with others, there isn't a lot to you can do. This is a mild sleep disorder. It will probably disappear. He's 8 years of age. These things are not uncommon. It might be a small form of night terror, which also is common at this age. So you don't necessarily need to do anything. Does he fall back to sleep in a reasonable amount of time? Then nothing needs to be done.
Yeah. And generally speaking, they grow out of that in time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it needs to be watched, but probably yes.
Mm. My 13-year-old son has developed a head twitch that is getting more frequent and noticeable. He is happy at home and in school with lots of friends, etc. It doesn't seem to bother him, but keen to get it sorted given the awkward age he's at.
Well, they're here again, and we've talked about this a lot. About 25% of people develop a transient tic at some point in their life. Transient means just what it says. It lasts for a while and eventually goes away. How long? Well, how long is a piece of string? Months, yeah. Weeks, maybe a year. Do not draw attention to it, please. If, in fact, it's beginning to become an issue socially for him and other children are mocking or jeering him about it, then you might want to bring him to the GP and have it looked at. But 99 times out of 100, there isn't anything to be done about this medically. So monitor it, watch, observe, see if its frequency increases. Does the tick disappear and is it followed by something else somewhere else in the body?
Yeah.
Or does it stay the same? How frequent is it? How severe is it? You might want to be observing, are there any stressors in the boy's life?
Yeah.
Because stress can cause, if there's an underlying predisposition for a tick, it can cause a tick to emerge. So I might want to talk to teachers. About 13, I'm going to guess that he's in first year. Talk to the year head, get some info. How's the boy doing? How's he adjusted to secondary school? Everything going well, et cetera. You know, all in the absence of any reason to be concerned in terms of behavior or personality change, moods, et cetera, you don't do anything for this.
My 7-year-old son has specific speech and language impairment. He completed 2 years in a language unit and is in mainstream first class now. His frustration levels were always low, but they've become much worse as of late. He handles his emotions similarly to his 4-year-old brother. I've requested a review of his psychology assessment carried out when he was 3. I'm so worried about him. Any advice on how to get him to cope better with his emotions?
Well, number one, you do need a repeat assessment. That's really important. Number two, all specific speech and language impairments carry with them social communication difficulties and often emotional control difficulties because we regulate our emotions by thinking,
yeah.
And we think in sentences. So if there's a significant impairment in expressive language, there's going to be an impairment in our ability to think through things. If the impairment is in vocabulary, then we lack words to label our emotions, and therefore we have to act them out. Since the boy has been identified as having a specific speech and language impairment and has had at least one psychological at the age of 3, was it? When he was 3. That needs to be redone. Now, that could be there could be on a wait list there for NEPS to get that done, but it would be really useful to have it readministered. Now, next thing is I would want to know, is there an individual education plan in place in the school, an IEP? All children with a special needs condition have an entitlement to an IEP. There's no requirement, however, most unfortunately, parents, there is no requirement that one be written. But most schools do, in fact, write them. The IEP must address not only academic issues, but social and emotional issues as well. And there should be some strategies written in there in cooperation with parents to help him develop better coping strategies. This is a process over time. We're not going to look for instant fixes here. We're going to look for improvement over time.
Yeah.
So look at the IEP, see what the short-term objectives and long-term goals are in terms of social and emotional development. Get a repeat psychological, and that will guide you forward.
Yeah. A fair amount of comments as well about the question we got about sex education class, or at least using the anatomically correct terms for kids in national school. Perhaps if we used anatomically correct words from an early age with no shame or hesitation, people wouldn't still be giggling at it when they're 20. As a society, we still act like so-called private parts or something secret and shameful. Says one texter. Amy says, I'm 28. The only sex ed I got in school was to not let anybody touch under where your swimsuit covers. That was it. One sentence in fourth class.
Yeah. Well, that's not unusual. This is 28-year-old.
Yeah.
So roll back the clock. Teachers had a lot of difficulty even use. I remember quite some time ago working in a school up in Rohini, a boys primary school, and the teacher was doing SESE, scientific education. It revolved around body parts, and he had to say the word urine. And he did. He was an older gentleman. But I remember after the class was over, we were walking down to the staff room, and he looked at me and he said, you know, David, 10 years ago, I could have never said that word in a classroom. ever, he said. So uptight was I about it. So it just reflects that one of your texters there is correct. We grow up with a lot of inhibitions and a lot of restrictions about using proper language for our body parts.
Yeah, none of us are perfect, really, unfortunately. David, thanks a million. Thank you. As ever, David Carey there. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.